Now, some of you out there are saying, well, of course accuracy matters. I mean, if you have a blog and you say you're providing news and you tell people lies, you know, they're going to hold this against you. You're going to get a bad reputation. And I would say that you are disconnected from reality. I mean, people have very short memories. I mean, 4 years ago, Hussein Obama promised to close Guantanamo Bay. Well, it's still there. And nobody remembers this. That's 4 years ago. That's a long time. I mean, you can put shit on the internet and people will forget about it almost instantly. Furthermore, because... And if you're just coming in, then if you did not listen to the previous edition of Stating the Obvious, then you have no fucking clue what I'm talking about. And you're going to have to go back and listen to it. Because this is a pickup from where I was previously. Which would have been Stating the Obvious 139. By the way, for those of you who do podcast, I really fucking hate it when you don't number your podcast and you don't include the number of the podcast in the title on your website. There are times where I listen to most of my podcasts, not the moment they come out, but much later. And so if something happens and I want to go back and look at the show notes for a particular episode, I can never find the goddamn thing for half of you fuckers out there because you don't give the podcast a number and you don't put the number in the title and you don't put the number in the fucking file name. So if you guys had really fucking learned to number your fucking podcast, I'd really fucking appreciate it. Fucking A. Okay. Now, short attention spans. On the internet, people are on the internet. So you publish, you know, some blog publishes some piece of horseshit that's not true or that's exaggerated, that's not verified, whatever it is. So people start sharing this because we're going to share. Because sharing, this is another aspect of how all of this works, right? The internet is all about being first. It's about getting clicks and it's about sharing. So something pops up in your Twitter stream. And it's this link, and it says, I don't know, let's just pull something out of the air. Yeah. By the way, I am the Great One himself. This is Cynical Libertarian Society. This is Stating the Obvious podcast. Randy is in the control room. I'm here in front of the microphone. You can email us at god@cynlibsoc.com. You can visit the website at cynlibsoc.com. Okay. You see a link and it says, you know, George Clooney butt fucks a hamster. Okay, so there. So you click on it and it takes you to some blog you've never heard of before. And then there's this article and it says, you know, there's a rumor that George Clooney has butt fucked a hamster. When asked to comment on this, George Clooney said, no comment. We suspect that it may be true. Okay. So there, now it's in your brain that George Clooney has butt-fucked a hamster. Never mind that it's not true, it's in your brain. You're never going to go back to this website again. You probably don't even know what website you saw this on. This is just a brief moment. It goes through your life, it's gone. So, and there's some links in there. In this article about George Clooney butt-fucking the hamster, there's two hyperlinks. And it says, George Clooney... attempted to butt fuck. No, George, he didn't attempt, he did. George Clooney butt fucked, and then butt fucked is like turned into a hyperlink. A hamster, and hamster is turned into a hyperlink. And so you see these hyperlinks, and you, oh look, this it's verified. There's hyperlinks, it must be true. And then the other, sources say George Clooney butt fucked a hamster. And the thing sources say is hyperlinked. It doesn't say who the sources are, but hey, the sources must be true, right? Because there's a hyperlink there. So you see this, and now you think George Clooney's butt-fucked a hamster. And so you go on your merry way, and you're thinking George Clooney's butt-fucked a hamster. So what was important is this website, this blog, got you to click on it, got you to go there. They've got another click. Their stats have gone up. Advertisers... you know, possibly made some money, if it's a pay-per-click kind of thing, whatever. I don't, yeah, I still don't really grasp, and, you know, I'd be the first to admit, again, see, this isn't why I'm so good, because when I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, I can be honest about this. I still don't understand how, with these websites, I mean, I can understand the concept of, I put an ad on a website, and somebody clicks on the ad, and comes to my website and buys something, how I would give a percentage of that to the website where the click originated from. That part I get. But what I don't get is how websites get paid by advertisers just for people seeing the advertisements, not clicking on them, just for seeing them. Which apparently, from my understanding, which, like I said, is limited on this, is how this works. Because as Ryan Holiday says in this book, the book I'm talking about is Trust Me, I'm Lying. Right, this is why websites like Huffington Post that make their money from advertisements want more and more clicks, because more clicks means more revenue, because they get paid more by the advertisers. And of course, I don't see these advertisements because I use Firefox and I use assorted plugins that block advertisements. And so when I see the internet on a browser that doesn't have the plugins that block the advertisements, I'm always amazed at how you people can fucking look at anything that has so many advertisements on it where you can't even find the content. Okay, so nobody cares about being accurate. People care about getting you to click on their website. And the way they do that is by sensationalism. Now, let's say at some point, a couple of days later, George Clooney comes out and he says, look, I did not butt-fuck a hamster, okay? That day I was with my wife or my girlfriend or whatever he's got going on. Oh, that's right, he's hanging out with Stacy Keibler. That's, ah, lucky motherfucker. God damn it, he's a bastard. So George Clooney didn't need to butt fuck a hamster because he's hanging out with Stacy Keibler, who is, for the record, just pointing this out, the hottest woman ever. Like, ever. Oh my God, Stacy Keibler. I would eat her shit. And you can fucking take that quote and put it on the internet. Stacy, if you're out there, I will eat your shit. Anything you want, baby. Just, anyway. All right, enough about my weird sex fantasies. Not that I fantasize about eating shit, but it's just Stacy Keibler is so fucking hot that it would be worth it to eat her shit. Randy, why is my microphone, what the fuck? Hold on, the microphone is really hot. I just noticed that. I know, I'm supposed to be, yes, I know I'm supposed to be paying attention. Well, it's tough shit. The audio quality for the first part of this podcast is going to suck balls, isn't it? There it is. All right. You're the engineer. You're supposed to be paying attention to this. She delegated to me. Well, that was a bad idea, wasn't it? I can't even fucking stay on topic. You're going to delegate something to me. All right. Nice move. What was I talking about? Oh yeah, eating Stacy Keibler shit. All right, so George Clooney did not butt fuck a hamster. Okay, so the website that reported this issues a correction, because this is the big thing about the fucking internet culture and like all the dickheads I know who are all blogger and shit and all this other stuff. Well, but you know, the internet, it has to be fast and you got to get out there. But the internet is fluid. You can always put out a correction if you say something wrong. And that's why in their minds it's always better to say something first, because, well, you can always come back and correct it later. Well, yes and no. You can put a correction on your page. So on this article where you said George Clooney butt fucked a hamster, okay, and they always put the corrections down at the bottom, or they'll put at the top, this thing has been updated, but then the update, the correction is always at the bottom. So you put the correction on there. First of all, most of the people who read the original post in which George Clooney supposedly fucked this hamster are not going to be coming back each day to check the post for updates and corrections. They're never going to see the correction. Furthermore, as Ryan points out in this book, and I thought this was like brilliant, it actually behooves you, if you're a blogger and you want clicks and you get paid by advertisers for getting clicks, it behooves you to put out wrong information, because when you issue a correction, the correction also, if you put the correction out on a different page, or even you put it out on the same page, the correction, if people are coming back to see the correction, that just means more hits on your website. I mean, it's fucking brilliant. Put out false information so that you get hits. Sensationalized false information to bring people to your website to read the sensationalized information, and then put out a correction to the sensationalized information, and get more hits. It's brilliant. And it's also why information on the internet, the truth value, the truth, yeah, the value, that's the word I want to use. The truth value of information on the internet always has to be suspect, depending, again, let me make this disclaimer like I did in the previous. In the context of this podcast, when I say website, what I'm mostly referring to is blog type websites, news, gossip, informational blog type websites of that nature, like Huffington Post, like Gawker. You know, he also writes about in the book an example where somebody went on Wikipedia and put a false quote by somebody who was dying on Wikipedia. And while sometime in the near future after that, Wikipedia editors, you know, saw the quote, knew it was false, took it off. During the time it was on, everybody who saw that believed it, and the quote from that made its way into the major news media. And the only reason that, and so the person who put the false quote on there came forward and said, look, the dying guy didn't actually say that, I made that up. But this is the thing about the internet. So it gets, say for example, on Wikipedia. If you go to Wikipedia today and you see that information on Wikipedia, it's in your brain as being true. You don't go back to that Wikipedia article every day in order to check to see if that information is still there or to see if it's been corrected. So the fact that on the internet you can issue a correction doesn't fucking matter unless people come back on a regular basis to check for corrections. Okay, I'm looking at my notes, trying to decide where I want to be here. Because I talked about that. I talked about accuracy, doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. Okay. He also talks about and I thought this was really interesting. I thought the whole book was interesting. That's why I'm talking about it. He talks about the use of snark as a replacement for reasoning. Because a lot of bloggers out there, and the one I'm going to be discussing in the near future here, once I get around to my actual example of copyright infringement and snarkiness and, you know, blogging sensationalism in order to get hits and everything. A lot of people use snarkiness as an attempt to very quickly, you know, humiliate and defame and discredit the person they're talking about and make it harder for anybody to respond to them. And they use it as a replacement for any kind of reasoning. You know, as I have said here on Stating the Obvious many times in the past, you know, yes, I do in fact make fun of people, and I do call people names, absolutely, 100%. I make fun of people for being fat and ugly, and I call people names, and I make fun of them. But I don't use this as a substitute for coming up with rational reasons why they're pieces of shit, right? Like Hussein Obama, the Messiah. I make fun of Obama. I call him names. I call him a filthy, cocksucking piece of shit. But then I don't just stop there. I back this up with actual information. You know, King Hussein Obama, your Messiah, who the man whose cock is down your mouth and the man whose cum you're swallowing. See, I'm making fun of you also. Okay, but now watch. I'm going to put substance into this, right? Obama kills people in foreign countries with flying robots. I don't care how you cut it. That's wrong. That is aggression against other human beings. Killing people, unless it happens to be in self-defense, is wrong. Obama is a liar. He said he would close Guantanamo Bay. He didn't do it. Okay? Obama said that... Well, no, he actually didn't say that. Never mind. I was getting off track. Okay, but I can give reasons why you're sucking Obama's cock, right? Obama made all these promises. You're not holding him to any of them. You know, Obama murders people. Obama continues to support the war on drugs. Obama admitted to smoking marijuana. Obama imprisons people for smoking marijuana. That makes him a cocksucking scumbag. It makes you a cocksucking scumbag because you support a man who smoked marijuana but who puts people in prison for smoking marijuana. And many of you who support Obama actually smoke marijuana. And so you're so stupid that you don't even understand that Obama might fucking put you in prison. And you're supporting a man who may imprison you and take from you everything you have and destroy your life. And you're doing it ultimately because you're a stupid motherfucker. It's because you have no understanding of the non-aggression principle. You have no understanding of property rights. You have no true understanding of freedom. You're just a statist, cocksucking, motherfucking piece of shit. And there, I called you names again. But again, see how I'm utilizing reason to explain why you're a fucking cocksucking piece of shit. And then I'm calling you a cocksucking piece of shit. Ryan Holiday's point in his chapter about snark is that there's a lot of snark on the internet, which is used preemptively and not backed up by any kind of evidence. And this is done to, of course, discourage conversation and, of course, to generate controversy, to get what? To get attention, to get clicks to the website. Because, again, the internet is driven by people clicking on things. Share it, and so other people click on it. Share it, so other people click on it. That's what drives the advertising economy behind the internet. Everybody who has a website wants more hits. Everybody does it. I do it. You go in, you look at your stats. Hey, look, I had a hits that day. I didn't get shit that day. Wow, my hits aren't going up. What the fuck can I do? Well, you publish a blog post that says, you know, George Clooney butt fucked a hamster. Whatever. You know, this is SEO 101. I mean, people who are good at this stuff will tell you that if you write a blog, whenever a holiday is coming up, write a blog post about the holiday, because near Christmas time, people will be Googling for Christmas present suggestions. So if you can write a blog post about Christmas present suggestions, you're gonna get more hits. Why? Because all that matters is hits. Whether or not your blog post has any fucking substance, whether or not it's useful, whether or not it's true, has nothing to do with a fucking thing. You're writing it to get hits. You're not writing it to convey useful and accurate information. It's just being written to get hits. All right, let me look at my notes again. I hate having the notes on the computer because I do this stuff. He talks a lot too, and this has been discussed a million times, but the way so much of the online media is not even about something that could be construed as news. And the classic example of this is a lot of online media is about online media. Here's the classic example. When Osama bin Laden was killed, the news got out, Osama bin Laden got killed. But then there started being all of these blog posts and news reports and stuff about how the news about Osama bin Laden getting killed first came out on Twitter. As if this is somehow important. And of course, people who are into social media very desperately want you to believe that this was important, because Twitter found out about Osama bin Laden's death 20 minutes before the rest of the world. because that 20 minutes was somehow or another so important and so critical. And so much of the blogosphere is just blog post about blog post. Hey, look, this was on Twitter. Well, who gives a shit? First of all, this was not even necessarily useful information. So it's not even news. It's news about how the news is created, which is not useful information. This is another point he hammers home in the book, which I completely agree with. So much of this shit out there in the blogosphere is not only, there's the point that it's not researched, it's not verified, it's not accurate, but so much of it is not even fucking useful, okay? Knowing that, and he uses this as an actual example in the book, knowing that Osama bin Laden is dead can be useful information. Knowing that people found out that Osama bin Laden is dead on Twitter is not really useful information. There are a lot of people out there who very desperately want to turn that into useful information, and those people are social media consultants who charge money to tell people to use Twitter. Oh God, that fucking, what was the name of that book? I read a book, Something about digital royalty. It's written by somebody named Amy Jo something. Anyhow, here's the summary of this book. It's this upper middle class white girl who went to college and then she got a job working for a multi-billion dollar corporation sports team. And she told other rich famous people like The Rock and Shaq to use Twitter. And they used Twitter and people followed them on Twitter. Shocking. I know. I can't believe it. People would follow The Rock on Twitter. Holy shit. And now she calls herself digital royalty. And she's running around talking about how awesome she is. And she's writing a book about how great she is. I mean, no, you did nothing. Most social media consultants do nothing. One of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen is an Onion spoof of a TED Talk where it's this guy talking about social media. And he says something to the effect of, you know, this company came to us and they wanted to do social media. And so we made a Facebook page for them. We didn't invent Facebook. Facebook was already there. All we did was make a Facebook page and they paid us money and we didn't even do anything. And I'm like, yes, that's social media and that is social media consulting. So there are people out there who really desperately want you to believe that the fact that Osama bin Laden's death was reported on Twitter first is really important, and it's earth-shattering, and it's so important. And these people are social media consultants. These are people who don't create anything. Twitter is already there. Facebook is already there. These are people who are getting paid to tell you to use things that already exist. So yes, of course, they want you to believe this. But anybody with a fucking brain should know that the fact that Osama bin Laden's death was reported on Twitter 20 minutes before it came out on the news is not a big fucking deal. Now, because I'm running out of time. By the way, you should read this book. Let's get to this last part. He talks about what he calls the yellow press versus the subscription model. I don't know where the term yellow press comes from exactly. But apparently it comes from back in the days of newspapers. So here's the story, and he presents all of this a lot better than I'm going to blast through it right now. Back in the day, newspapers were sold. You know, they printed up a newspaper, the newspaper boy went out, stood on a corner and screamed, you know, extra, extra, war has been declared, you know, when in fact what the headline actually is war might be declared maybe sometime next week, whatever. But the point is you use sensationalism to sell newspapers because you're selling the newspapers one at a time. This was before newspaper subscriptions. So you're standing out there on the corner, you got your bundle of newspapers that you paid for, and now you need to resell those newspapers to make your profit. So the way you do that is with sensationalism. You scream, war has been declared, you know, buy your newspaper here, read all about it. And this led to low points in print journalism. So then the subscription method came along, where, and he actually mentions which newspaper actually pioneered the subscription stuff, and I don't remember, but it's in the book, that's why you read the book. But yeah, the point is, you come along and you say, no, instead of selling our newspaper one copy at a time, based on sensationalism, we are going to sell our subscriber, we're going to sell people a subscription. They're not subscribers until the subscription model comes along. You can't have subscribers before a subscription. We are going to operate on the principle of a subscription basis. We are going to sell people, not just the newspaper, but we're going to sell them the newspaper every single day. And in doing this, what we're selling them isn't It is the physical newspaper. Yes, we are selling them the physical newspaper, but what we're selling them in the subscription model is the ongoing relationship. And people on the fucking blogosphere can't shut the fuck up about relationships and transparency, both of which I want to tell them to fuck off and die whenever they talk about it. And maybe that's another topic. In the subscription model, we're selling our subscribers the newspaper, yes, but we're selling them our reputation. They're seeing this same newspaper from these same people day after day after day. That when we make mistakes, they're going to see the mistakes. We are building a relationship with them. We are continuing to give them something over and over. We're building a reputation for ourselves to the point that in the yellow press days, with the kids on the street corner screaming extra, extra, read all about it, people were attracted to whichever kid was screaming out the most controversial or attention-getting headline. You know, the kid standing there with the newspaper going, George Clooney butt fucks hamster, read all about it. And that's where the internet is today. There is no subscription model. Very few people go back to the same website for information over and over and over. Like, I have reached a point where there's a couple of different blogs that I go to on a regular basis and I read them. And I pretty much, and I follow links in those blogs and I research the things that they say to see, you know, to trace it back to see where it comes from to find out if it's true. But I don't, you know, most people don't do that. Most people, whatever link pops up on Twitter, whatever pops up on Facebook, they click, they read that, they believe it. There is no subscription type relationship with the blogs that are providing this information, right? The blogs that I read on a regular basis, I've been reading for a while now, and I've got a feel for the people who are writing them, and it has created a sense of trust here. This doesn't mean I mindlessly believe everything they say, but the point is, not only that, but it creates a context. Okay, the subscription model, if you read a blog all the time, you have a context for the information. It's just like with this podcast. If you are one of these people who's actually listened to multiple episodes of the podcast, if God forbid you've listened to every episode of this podcast, you have a very good context for everything I'm saying and for the way I'm saying it. And, you know, especially because I've been doing this for so many years and because my opinions have evolved so much over time, you should have a very good context for everything that I say. Whereas somebody who comes in and just gets a random podcast episode, you know, is not going to have that context, and they're not going to have a full understanding of who I am and what I'm saying and where I'm coming from and where I've been and where I may be going, you know, as my views and opinions and philosophies continue to evolve and expand and change. And that is Ryan Holiday's point that that is what does not exist right now in the blogosphere. People go out, they read one blog post on a blog, and they never go back. They know nothing about the person who wrote it. They know nothing about the context. They know nothing about where that information came from. They know nothing about the blog overall. They know nothing about where it's been, where it's going, what its goals are. They have no fucking context. All they have is a fucking 200-word blog post with a big, giant, screaming headline that says, George Clooney butt-fucked a hamster. And it's not true, and it's never been true, but nobody fucking cares because the blog site is only looking for clicks. Clicks to drive advertising, and clicks are generated by controversy. The entire subscription model, and he points out this is why he thinks that RSS is dying, because in the with RSS, again, and it's like I can put this in the context of the podcast that I listen to, or the I don't do blogs by RSS. I actually go to the website on a regular basis because I don't want the RSS pushed. I want to go to a blog site when I have time to read through it, so I don't want to have it pushed at me. But for the podcast, I RSS them and they download, and so I listen to them, like Bad Quaker. I have listened, I'm way behind on Bad Quaker right now, but when I started listening, I went back in time and listened to his first episodes and came all the way through. I now have an understanding of Ben Stone, so when he says things, I have a context to put it in, right? Without that subscription model, without that subscription type interaction with the source of information, with the blog that you are getting information from on the website, when you don't have that, you lose the context. You lose the ability to evaluate what's going on. You lose the ability to trust. And this is the thing. Of course, people just mindlessly believe anything they read on the internet. That's why, of course, all of this works. This is why some low-level blogger can write this post, George Clooney butt-fucked a hamster, and then the Huffington Post sees that people on Twitter are talking about, hey, there's this blog post, George Clooney butt-fucked a hamster, did you know that? And Huffington Post jumps on it, because holy shit, George Clooney, he's hot shit. He's doing Stacey Keibler right now, he's rich, he's a man, he's white, he's in Hollywood, we can gossip about him, and hey look, he butt-fucked, because fuck ever, anytime you can talk about somebody's sex life, that's always going to get clicks, right? And then a hamster, they're cute, they're cuddly, PETA can get in on that. George Clooney butt fucks hamster. That's a highly SEO friendly title for your fucking blog post. Huffington Post is all over that shit. Then it's in Huffington Post. Now it's really going crazy on Twitter and Facebook and shit. And CNN sees that shit. And holy shit, look at this. It's on Huffington Post. And everybody's talking about it on Facebook, and you click from Huffington Post, and there's a link to this other site, and this site has like three fucking links in it. There's three links in this article. Fuck, it must be true. We're reporting this on CNN. And now George Clooney is sitting there looking at fucking reporters, sticking a goddamn microphone in his face, going, George, how'd you like butt fucking that hamster? And George is like, dude, if I could fucking shoot you in the face right now, I would, because you're a jackass. I did not butt fuck a goddamn hamster. But now everybody believes he butt fucked a hamster, because nobody's going to read the correction. Nobody gives a shit what George Clooney says, because George Clooney has already been snarked by all these people. Yeah, George Clooney, I always knew he was butt-fucking hamsters because, yeah, you know, he ain't man enough for Stacey Keibler like I am. Look at me, I'm so snarky. Right, and this is how the fucking cycle works. And you dumb fucking statist out there, you believe this shit. And believe me, the same thing, I'm using George Clooney. Using George Clooney. Using George Clooney, butt-fucking hamster example. But if you think this isn't how politics works, then apparently you're fucking stupider than I think you are, and I think you're pretty fucking stupid. Right? The same thing, it works to sell merchandise, it works to sell politicians, it works to defame people, because it's all about getting clicks. He, in Ryan Holiday, in the book here, Trust Me, I'm Lying, another book title there, another mention of the book title, if I can learn how to talk. I hate when people talk about stuff and don't repeat what they're talking about a couple of times so that you can catch it. Try not to do the things I hate when other people do. That'd be a good idea, wouldn't it? All right, what the fuck was I talking about? Oh, he gives some examples in here about how this has been used for political means. So anyhow, there it is. Book. Read that. You need to read that fucking book. Now, as I shift the microphone, we are going to move into, where are we at on time, Randy? 36, thank you. All right, 36, 46, I have, all right, done a lot of time. Let me see if I can get this done, because I do not want to do a third episode. Well, I'll do more episodes about this. All right, see, this is not me focusing. All right. Talking about all of this and people who are desperate for fucking clicks on their websites. Now, I debated whether or not I would mention who this person is and shit, and I finally just decided I'm not sure I give a fuck. So, because this is the thing, it's like, so this is another debate. When you're talking about somebody, do you mention who they are and send traffic to them? Because this is the beautiful thing. If I tell you who I'm talking about, you're going to go look at this person's website, which is just going to result in her getting more clicks on her website, which is exactly what she's trying to do. And so I always feel like, which way do you go? Do you not talk about who they are and then run the risk of people just saying, well, you know, you didn't give a reference for where all this came from. You could have made it all up. Or do I say who they are, and then you go and click on it, and you go there, you click, and you give them more hits, which is exactly what they want? Or do I leave it up to you to take the little bit of information I give you and try searching for it and trying to find it? But of course, I think that's probably the best route, because most people aren't going to do that much work. Okay, now, this woman, we will call her Alice. Whoa, that was interesting. Okay. Woo, I got distracted there by the internet. Okay. What did I say about short attention spans? Yep, there it is. All right. I know, Randy's giving me shit. It's okay, I can handle it. I'm a man, kind of. This woman, we're going to call her Alice. She wrote this blog post. And so, first of all, Alice's shtick is that she's a bitch with an attitude and she says the word fuck a lot. Now, this whole thing is about how other people are stealing her ideas. So let's see, who is a bitch with an attitude that uses the word fuck a lot? Whose shtick is that? Randy, do you know anybody that's like really mouthy and bitchy and has an attitude and uses the word fuck a whole lot? Do you fucking know anybody like that? I cannot for the fucking life of me think of any fucking asshole who falls into that. Oh wait, it's me. Yes. Hey Alice, the whole shtick you have on your fucking website, She uses the word fuck on her website prominently. Okay, Alice, your whole fucking shtick? Thanks for coming. I came up with that. I started this fucking podcast long before you were fucking on the scene, honey. So while you're running around whining about people stealing from you, taking your copyrighted intellectual property, you're stealing my shtick, bitch. Okay, now, She even has a fucking poster. She has a fucking poster. And the poster just says, why I swear so much. Because fuck you. Okay, gee, whose shtick does that fucking sound like? But it's okay. It's okay, honey. All right, now, she's got this blog post, which is designed specifically to get clicks, because apparently her website traffic was dropping off, about how somebody else has stole her idea because she has a buy me coffee plan. Hold on. We're going to do this right now, live, right here on the podcast. Buy me. She thinks that the concept of buying her coffee is like hers, that she fucking owns this shit. I'm Googling buy me coffee. Why does Google suck so much? about 256 million results for Buy Me Coffee. But no. Alice thinks she fucking owns this shit. So now here's the text. That's not the text. That's not it either. So here we go. So she writes this whole blog post about how this other person, whom we're going to call Betty, stole her writing off of her website. And so here is the comparison. First, I'm going to read, and this is just all this, you, those of you who are smart will be able to find this and read the fucking whining. And then she wrote another follow-up post. See, this is what I'm talking about. Corrections. If you write a follow-up post about what you posted about, that's more clicks. This is a blogger tactic. You don't write one long post. You write 2, 3, 4 short posts because you get people coming back, because every time they come back, that's another hit on your website that increases your stats. Your stats are what you sell to advertisers. Your stats are what make you think people love you. Again, it's not about providing useful information. Okay, I also need to point out that in these things where she's whining, she provides links to copyright.gov's fair use guidelines. And she, you know, puts source copyright.gov. Why? Because, look, you've put a hyperlink in there. It must be plagiarism because you have a hyperlink in your post. It must be true. Okay, now, let's get to... And this too brings us the whole libpair thing, right? Intellectual property. You know, as a photographer, I have to struggle with this because as an ANCAP, I recognize intellectual property is bullshit. As a photographer, I would love for it to be true. Here's the thing. If somebody lifts something from you directly, I can see you've got a legit complaint. But if I take a picture of the Eiffel Tower and somebody else takes that picture of the Eiffel Tower and puts it on their website without asking me, I can see this as intellectual property theft. If I take a picture of the Eiffel Tower at night from the roof of a particular building, and then somebody else sees that and they know what building I was on and they go on to the top of that same building at night, and they take a picture of the Eiffel Tower, it's going to look pretty fucking similar to mine. For me to sit there and scream intellectual property theft is, honestly, pretty fucking pathetic. And that's the best analogy I can make to what this dumb bitch is doing in this blog post. So now, she actually also in the other blog post puts out a link to another website which she claims is stealing her ideas. In that one, I'm actually more inclined to believe it because the other person that she links to actually rips off more of her language, in my opinion, than the first one. So let's take a look at this, and you tell me if you think we have theft here. If Betty is stealing from Alice. Okay, here we go. This is what Alice wrote. I have over 18 years worth of thoughts, intuitions, and experiences in the marketing and branding realm rolling around in my head. Marketing and brand. All right, I have to refrain from commentary, but I have to say, marketing and branding in my mind is right up there with social media consultants. It's people who are selling you bullshit. All right, Randy, if I do any more editorializing, I want you to fucking... Oh, you can't throw something at me. There's glass between us. I must focus. All right. Here we go. Alice says this. I have over 18 years worth of thoughts, intuitions, and experience in the marketing and branding realm rolling around in my head, and I'm ready to share them all with you, specific to your situation, goals, personality, and business. You get to pick my brain, and all it takes is buying me a cup of coffee. Now, here's what Betty writes. As you can see from my content here on name of my website, I have accumulated a lot of great information for entrepreneurs and small business owners to better market themselves with social media, and I love to share it, which is why I want to connect with more brands to let them pick my brain and build a better digital marketing plan for their business. Now, Alice has conveniently underlined in red the parts of these that have been stolen. So in the first part it says, "And I'm ready to share them all with you." In Betty's copy it says, "And I love to share it." Alice believes that Betty writing, "And I," now this is, now out of all that, these are the only parts that are the same. So Betty writes, "And I love to share it." And Alice believes that this is intellectual property theft because she wrote the phrase, "And I'm ready to share them all with you." Alice also believes that Betty stole from her because Betty used the phrase, "Pick my brain." Alice also used the phrase, "Pick my brain." Alice believes that she owns the phrase, "Pick my brain." This is akin to Apple believing that it owns round corners. This is the fucking danger of intellectual property, is when you get shit like this and when it gets taken seriously. When this stupid bitch actually believes that she owns the phrase "pick my brain," when she believes that if somebody writes "and I love to share it," that that person has stolen from her because she wrote "and I'm ready to share them all with you." But wait, we've only begun. There's more. Oh, there's so much more. Okay, here's the next phrase that she thinks is stolen. Alice's phrase, "And granted, it'll probably be the most expensive cup of coffee you've ever bought, but it'll be worth it for the right people, that is." That's what Alice wrote. This is what Betty wrote. "Keep in mind, the only coffee more expensive than this would be if you flew to Colombia to brew it yourself, but I promise you it will be worth it if you're serious about your business." Alice believes that that's stealing from her. The next one that's marked is, Alice writes, "Who should think about buying me coffee?" Betty writes, "Are we a good fit for caffeinating?" Alice believes that Betty infringed on her copyright and stole her intellectual property for that. Now, next one. Alice wrote, "Here's what you need to know about my buy me coffee sessions." Betty wrote, "Here's what you need to know about these sessions." Alice thinks that "here's what you need" and the word "sessions" belong to her. Now look. And let's go back to my example. I can see how Betty could have very well seen this information on Alice's page and said, "Hey, that's a great idea. I'm going to adapt that to my use." And I can see how there's some similar flow and stuff like that. But this goes back to my example. I take a picture of the Eiffel Tower from the roof of a particular building at night. Somebody else takes a picture of the Eiffel Tower from the roof of that building at night. They're gonna look fucking similar because they came from a similar place. The idea that Alice fucking owns all of these ideas and that nobody else can take the idea, that nobody else can say, "Here's what you need to know," that Alice fucking owns the idea, that owns the concept of "Here's what you need to know." I mean, this is absolutely fucking just asinine and pathetic and just desperately begging for attention. Okay. Alice writes, "You will need to do some work beforehand." Betty writes, "There will be homework. I want to give you the best possible advice during our scheduling time together so that once you have confirmed a time and made payment for your appointment with the scheduler below, I will send you a follow-up email and what I will need to learn from you more so I can help you out. Let's make the best of our time together." Alice thinks that all of that is a copyright infringement of her writing, "You will need to do some work beforehand," because Alice owns the concept of doing work beforehand. That's her copyright. That's her intellectual property. She came up with that. And wait a minute, here's a question. All you fucking sadists out there think that everybody owes everything because, well, you would have never come up with that if it weren't for the roads. That's why it's fair to pay taxes. Well, wait. Okay, if it takes a village and we all need the roads and all this other shit, how can you sit here and say that you fucking have copyright and intellectual property ownership over the concept of doing work beforehand? You're a fucking stupid, sick fucking bitch. Here's the next ones. Sessions last roughly 1 hour. Maybe a little more or a little less, but at the end you'll get blah blah. You'll get blah blah blah. Now here's what Betty wrote. Sessions will last between 60 to 90 minutes. This is all the time I can offer in my schedule for one call. Doing your homework, blah blah blah. So Alice thinks that she owns the concept of having a session that lasts roughly 1 hour. She thinks that's her intellectual property. Okay? And then scheduling. Alice writes, scheduling. For Buy Me Coffee sessions is restricted to Tuesdays and Thursdays and Fridays, and she gives the times, blah, blah, blah. And then Betty writes, scheduling. Time slots will be contingent on availability. My schedule, Tuesday through Thursday, she gives the time slots, blah, blah, blah. Alice thinks that she owns the concept of scheduling. Maybe she thinks that Tuesday and Thursday are her intellectual property. I don't know, but it's fucked up. And then Alice over here says, I use Bookfresh to book my appointments. And over here, look, Betty also uses Bookfresh to book her appointments. This is just like when the example I gave earlier. We made a page on Facebook. We didn't invent Facebook, but we made a page on In Charge Money. Alice uses some tool. I don't even know what Bookfresh fucking is, and I don't care. Alice uses Bookfresh to book her appointments. Betty is using Bookfresh to book her appointments. Wow, that must be copyright infringement. It must be violation of Alice's intellectual property. And oh, she's going to write a blog post, and she's going to generate fake controversy, and she's going to do sensational headlines, and she's going to say the word fuck. And then she's going to write another blog post about it later in the week. And other people are going to, that's how I even know about this. Because another person wrote a blog post about Alice writing the blog post about this, and that person shared his blog post about her blog post, and his blog post was a desperate attempt to get people to visit his website, so he wrote a blog post about another blogger's desperate attempt to get people to visit her website. Do you fucking see how the stuff that Ryan Holiday lays out in this book here works? Sensationalism. Blog post about blog post. Blog posts that don't convey any goddamn useful information. There's no explanation in here of how copyright law works, or how fair use works, or how this person's shit does this, or how any of this is actually theft of her intellectual property. It's just fucking name-calling and bullshit and sensationalism in a desperate fucking bid to get people to come to my website and buy my fucking products. Fuck you.